Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Molly Hockey is an actor, writer, comedian, and the host of one of my very favorite podcasts, Spermcast. Spermcast began back in 2018 when Molly decided to interview potential sperm donors in order to become a single mother by choice. Now it's in its third season, and Spermcast is about a lot more than just finding Molly some sperm. Over the past 3 years, Molly has been through home insemination, IUI, IVF, miscarriage, and a whole lot more. Molly's interviews are hilarious and informative, and I've learned so much from her show. If you don't already listen to Spermcast, you're really missing out. You can find the podcast wherever you are listening right now, and you should really check out her Patreon as well. That way you can support her show and access all kinds of fun bonus content that Molly puts out every week. You can find Molly on Instagram at Spermcast or on her website at spermcastpod.com. Molly and I recorded this interview back in mid-August. I know. That's why I'm taking a break from the podcast, because everything seems to take a lot more effort in my first trimester. But anyway, on the day that we recorded, I just had my very first ultrasound at 6.5 weeks, and I saw a heart beating on the screen for the very first time ever. So it was really exciting, but I was also feeling super vulnerable about it, and I was afraid to let myself be too hopeful. Because of that, I had told Molly about my pregnancy, but I'd said that we'd edit out any of the parts of the interview where I mentioned it. But since I waited so long to get this edited, you'll hear me say, I'm going to edit this out a time or two, and then I just leave it in anyway, because now you guys know that I'm pregnant and that so far, so good. So Molly was also in a very tender spot with her own pregnancy at the time of the interview, and you'll hear us talk about what it's been like to be on this journey so publicly and to have experienced pregnancy loss and to struggle with how and when to share these important stories. I'm happy to say that Molly's pregnancy is still going well, as is mine. Molly's now in her second trimester, and she's about to launch season 4 of Spermcast. I hope that you'll enjoy this conversation and that you'll make sure to go follow Molly and to listen to her story on Spermcast. Enjoy the show. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's so nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. It's so fun to talk to you. I know you probably don't feel like you know me as well, but I feel like I know you so well because I've literally listened to every single episode of your podcast, which—
Oh my gosh.
We've logged a lot of hours together.
That is a lot. You know more than my closest friends. You know me so much better than my best friends.
How funny. Part of why it's been so helpful for me is that our timing has really synced up, even down to we both lost our sweet dogs like right around the same time.
Gosh.
And I mean, we were doing IUIs at the same time. We were choosing donors at the same time. We moved to IVF at the same time. So had a very like parallel journey. And so I hate the word journey. I hate when people call it a journey, but
I know, but there's not a better word.
No. Okay. We've been doing all this stuff. That's very descriptive.
Yeah.
Kind of at the same time. And so it's been so helpful for you to do all the research that I just haven't necessarily had the energy to do and just to feel less alone. And so it's so fun to have you on my podcast, which is all about helping other women feel less alone. And I see you as sort of this role model of someone who's helped me feel less alone.
So. Oh my gosh. Well, you and all of my listeners have made me feel so much less alone. So it's definitely a back and forth. I don't know as much about you.
But well, that's okay, because this is, I really want to get into your story. So,
I truly like could not have done this without my listeners. So it can be lonely. So it's really nice to know that other people are experiencing the same things.
Definitely. Well, I wanted to start by just asking you kind of, and I won't be like, start at the beginning and tell me everything, because there's like so much, but I am curious about kind of how it all started in terms of your fertility. I'll say the word journey again, your fertility journey. Like, I know you froze eggs early on, but you know, kind of that part of it. And also the podcast, just kind of like, where did this all turn into a thing that was like this huge sector of your life?
Sure. Well, way back, I always wanted to have kids, and I never ever thought that I would become, you know, 30 and 35 and 37 and 39 without having a husband and a family. And this was all a shock to me. So I guess I started being a little bit more proactive when I was 37. I did freeze eggs. And back then, it didn't feel like other people were, I didn't know anybody else that had done it yet. Although I think it had been around for, I don't know, how many years, 5, 10 years?
No, I think it was 2012 when it became non-experimental. So they were doing but not for preservation. So you were really kind of on the cutting edge.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. I mean, I'm impressed that you did it, because sometimes I talk to women who are like in our age bracket and they're kicking themselves for not freezing their eggs when they were like 28. And I'm like,
but they didn't
girl,
know.
Girl, they didn't, well, it wasn't even available to you. Like, unless you had cancer or something, like they weren't just doing it for preservation. So you were really, you were on it. Good job.
Well, I remember my gynecologist recommended it when I came in at 35, and I was like, excuse me? You bitch. Like, how dare you insinuate that I won't be partnered?
Isn't that so funny? Because even if you were partnered, like even if you did meet you walked out of that appointment and met your guy, like that doesn't necessarily mean that you would have an easy time getting pregnant or that you'd want to get pregnant right away. So it makes total sense even if you are partnered. But I felt the same way.
It was an ego thing. And then, but I did start looking into it about a year later, and then finally ended up freezing eggs on my, like basically my 37th birthday. And then after that, forgot about fertility altogether and went and had a lot of fun and creativity. And that was a huge weight off of my shoulders. I've been hyper focused on finding the right person, the father of my children, for so long. And I didn't have to do that anymore. And it was really freeing. But then I was with a sweet guy, and and he told me that he was going to get a vasectomy.
Oh, gosh.
I was 39, and he said that he was thinking about getting a vasectomy. He already had two kids and he didn't want more. And I was like, okay, well, we better break up, and I'll see you in 5 years when I've got kids of my own. And we broke up, and then I said, oh no, how am I going to make kids? And then it occurred to me that I really needed to get on the ball. I wasn't prepared for this. I had no idea what I was going to do, and I'm an actor and a creative person. My first instinct was to make a joke Instagram, like every day I was going to interview a new sperm donor, but it was going to be a joke. And I
like a help wanted ad, but for sperm, like,
they were just going to be 1 minute ads. And I mean,
perfect.
1 minute interviews. And it was all a joke. And then a friend of mine said, why don't you just do it for real? And I was like, what? And then I thought about it and in December of 2018, I guess, I realized that I needed to make this podcast, which was going to lead me to figure all of this stuff out. I did it to find a sperm donor, but I also did it for personal growth. And it's funny because I'm kind of shocked that, like, that's kind of my thesis right in the beginning of my first episode, even in my trailer for my podcast. And that's pretty much what happened. I found a sperm donor and I figured all this stuff out, but it was really a tool for personal growth. And I've learned so much from all of it. And it forced me to learn so much because I did it on a weekly basis in real time.
Right.
It held me accountable.
Yeah. And if listeners don't listen to your podcast, you literally have no excuse, because you're listening to one right now and hers is way better. So go listen. But I would say if you're in a hurry, just listen to your theme song, because it is amazing. And I still enjoy it. Like, I feel like any other podcast, I would kind of fast forward because you've heard it a million times at this point. Still listen, still laugh every time. And I feel like at first it was so playful and fun and creative, and it still totally is all of that, like, kind of lightheartedness. But it also has just taken on, like, I laugh and kind of cringe every time you say, I just need sperm. Because, like, oh, sweetie, like, we both at one point thought, that's all we're missing. We just need sperm.
That's so true.
Right?
I really need to analyze that.
Well, please don't re-record it, because it's amazing. I love it. Don't ever change it. But it is, I mean, we both, I think, kind of started there, where it was like, well, as soon as I find the sperm, then for sure I'll get pregnant.
Yeah.
The first time I try, right? Like,
right.
Because I'm not an infertile person. Like, I just don't have a man. Like, I remember learning the term
social infertility and being like so annoyed, but then also being like, well, yeah, it distinguishes me from someone that's going to like need to do IVF or something. And then here we are.
And then you became one of those people.
Yes. And so did you.
I know. It's such a weird, like, why did I care? Why did it matter? And each step along the way, it's like I'm breaking down some sort of vision of what I thought I would be and chipping away at it. And none of that vision actually matters.
Totally. And you know what I think is so beautiful about that is you would have been an amazing mom if your first couple of cycles, you know, if it had worked way back then. Mm-hmm. But the things that you've learned in this process and the chipping away, because I think as parents, it's impossible to not have like expectations or dreams for your kid. And then they're going to tell you who they are, and it may not be who you thought they were going to be or who you expected them, you know, and you've kind of learned how to let go of expectations and embrace just what's on the table for you and be in the space that you are. And I just think that's one of the most important keys to parenting. So I think you're going to be such a better mom, you know, because you've been through what you've been through and you know how to handle, like how to find happiness and hope and all of that in circumstances that if you'd known at the beginning this is where this was headed, maybe you would have just called the whole thing off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. I'm definitely still learning though. I've got a ways to go. I'm sure I'm going to have a lot more hurdles and
oh boy, I don't know what they are.
Well, one of the hurdles I enjoyed going through with you, experiencing you go through, was this hurdle from really feeling committed to finding a known donor to using a sperm bank, but it was like very clear. I actually remember one walk that I took. I was in Portland, Maine for work, and it was like this beautiful walk out on, and I was listening to you and I was just like, I just want her to feel okay about using a sperm bank. Cause it was like at that point where you were like transitioning, but you were not okay with it.
Yes.
And to a point where like now who cares? Like it's not even. Cares?
I don't even know what my donor looks like anymore. I haven't looked at his profile in, I don't know, 8 months.
Yeah. Well, so will you talk about that? Like kind of what was going on through that progression?
Yeah. Well, what happened was that I got pregnant using a known donor. And then a couple days into my pregnancy, he said, hey, I'm so happy for you. Look, if this doesn't work out, I'm not going to be able to donate anymore. I was like, what? Okay. And that was all fine. You know, things happen. But sure enough, I did end up having a miscarriage a couple weeks later and felt, you know, on top of the feeling of having a miscarriage and that loss, I also had like the loss of this person who I thought was going to sort of be there through thick and thin. He was a good friend of mine. So I was really excited to have a known donor for a couple reasons. One is that I have alcoholism in the family and there's not really a way to tell if somebody has, you know, those kind of things going on. If you get them from a sperm bank, I'm sure they have psychological analysis.
But it's all kind of honor system, right? I mean, it's just what they've reported. It's not, right.
Yes. And I had met a sperm donor or I had heard about, I think I messaged with one or something on Facebook who a year before he started donating, he was living in his car addicted to heroin. But this was back in the 90s when he was a donor. I think he wrote a book about it. I can't remember. We never ended up doing an interview. I was nervous about the honesty factor. I also have autism in the family. And I spoke to a genetic counselor. She said, I probably don't have a higher chance than the general public. But who knows, that with stuff with a sperm bank, a sperm frozen donor. My words are not going out. It's okay.
It's okay.
Can we tell the audience I'm pregnant?
Yes. 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 That's a blanket excuse for anything that goes wrong.
I'm nervous about saying that out loud. I might have baby brain. Okay, guys. Anyway. So I was worried about those things that you sort of can't know. And then I was also, I just thought it would be ideal for my child to be able to know who, where their genetics came from before the age of 18. I thought it would be easier for them psychologically. I didn't care if it was more complicated for me. I also wasn't afraid though, because I was asking friends who I trust and I wasn't afraid. And I think ideally I'd still go for a known donor if I had somebody right now that was ideal. But at the time when I had the miscarriage, I was in a rush to get pregnant, and I didn't want to waste a second, and I didn't want to go searching for, I'd at this point been searching for a donor for a year on my podcast. I didn't want to go through that anymore. And I didn't want to risk having somebody back out again. So, so I just quickly went the sperm bank route, but it was, it was a hard sort of transition, and there's definitely benefits to having an anonymous donor.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about donor siblings? Like, would you ever, are you interested in tracking down families who've used your same donor? Have you already explored that?
No, I haven't at all. I think because I'm too superstitious about, so like I mentioned earlier, I'm pregnant.
Yes.
But only 9 weeks, and I'm day by day. So, you know, I don't want to look too far ahead in the future. So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be my kid's sibling or whatever. So I think I'll get to that at some point, but I haven't looked yet, but
it makes sense to me that you wouldn't want to like explore that.
I do worry. Will I like the other parents?
I worry so much about that.
But like, what if I'm like, have nothing in common with these people, and I'm just like, oh, now I'm attached to them somehow.
Right. That was my main hang up with even looking in the first place. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think I want for my kid to decide if he wants them to even be.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't think I would do anything until he's kind of old enough to.
I don't know. Maybe I'm avoidant, you know, because I'm just too afraid of disappointment, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've had a lot. I mean, you've had to manage a lot of disappointment along the way.
Yeah. I've been through it a little bit. So I just sort of try not to look forward, but that I don't want that to be like I'm unprepared, but I'll get there. I have plenty of time.
Yes, you do. And in case we haven't said it, you're pregnant. And one of the very touching moments. There have been multiple times where I've cried listening to your podcast, but in this last episode where you have the recording of your ultrasound at eight and a half weeks, right?
Yeah.
And where you kind of acknowledge that I'm going to cry just saying it right now. Like where you acknowledge that it's the first time you let yourself use the word baby.
Yeah. Now I'm crying.
It's so sweet. It's so sweet, but it's so vulnerable. Like it's so vulnerable. To allow
you made me cry.
Ourselves to say that. So my question made me cry too. My question for you is, do you have a sense of, is there a mile marker in your mind where it's going to feel safer? Because 9 weeks, girl, you're doing pretty well. You're almost through the first trimester.
I'm doing well and everything looks great so far, but my embryos weren't tested. And so I'm going to have genetic testing next week. Mm-hmm. NIPT, non-invasive prenatal testing. And I don't know, that's terrifying. I've never made it this far. And if there was something wrong that was discovered with NIPT, I don't know if this is something that you even want on your podcast.
No, it's totally fine.
It's a very scary topic, but if there was something very terrible going on with the embryo or the fetus, I might have to make a terrible decision.
Right.
And so I think after I know that I don't have to do something like that, I think I'll feel okay.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And I don't think that that's going to happen.
No.
But yeah, I don't know how safe I'll feel until then.
Yeah.
If there is something weird, I'll get an amniocentesis and that'll be more definitive. And then I'll move forward from there. Fingers, toes, all of them are
absolutely
crossed.
Yes. And that makes so much sense. And it makes me really happy to hear that there is kind of a point at which, and I think just from what you've been through and all the stories you've heard, there's probably always going to be a little bit of apprehension, as there is for me. I think that's just part of like, we're not 23, like we're not the first people we know to get pregnant. And we are aware of all the different things that could happen. And we have friends who have experienced losses. We've experienced losses and, you know, it changes you. But I did learn from you early on, way back when you were doing IUIs, and you're like, I'm just going to enjoy just being pregnant for these next 2 weeks, like during the 2 week wait. And you really embrace that energy of what's the acronym? Poopo. P-U-P-O.
I don't know.
It's like some people put, I see it on like Instagram stuff that it's P-U-P-O, it's pregnant until proven otherwise.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that was really helpful for me.
Yeah. You get to just enjoy where you are, which is very pregnant is where you are right now.
Yes. I've been, you know, so exhausted, and earlier on I was short of breath. I'm feeling less exhausted, and that's giving me anxiety. Like, why don't I feel more exhausted? And why aren't my boobs sore? And why don't I have morning sickness? But, you know, I'm still pregnant.
You are very pregnant.
But yeah, on that ultrasound, it was the first time I called the baby a baby. And before that, one day I did a prenatal yoga early on, a video. I pulled it up, a random video, and she kept referring to talk to your baby. And I was like, whoa, and I immediately had to turn it off. I was like, no, how dare you?
Right, right. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah, yeah. That makes total sense to me.
Don't you call my baby a baby? Yeah.
So that kind of leads into something you and I talked about a little bit before we started recording. I wanted to talk to you about the experience of doing all of this so publicly.
Publicly, yeah.
Yeah. How's that been?
Weird. It's like a double-edged sword. No, that's not the right metaphor. It's got a ton of pros and a ton of cons.
I think that's a double-edged sword.
I'm like the worst with sayings. My mom always makes fun of me. So pros are that I have support from every direction and I feel less alone. And the cons are that everybody knows my business. Back when I was trying, it was, you know, constantly having to tell people, no, it didn't work. No, sorry, it didn't work. Or still waiting, or, you know, whatever, walking into a room and a group of friends and them knowing and me having to just know that they know, but we don't have to talk about it. It's just like so strange.
Yeah. Well, and you've kind of made your personal life in this like deeply personal journey into your work as well. And so there's like no escaping it.
That's true too. It's a full-time job just making this baby, which is crazy.
Do you feel like you've gotten to experience, because I only hear the part that is about the baby, but in these 2 years, like,
has there been anything else?
Have you gotten to have a life outside of it, or is it truly all focused on, I feel like my life has been very focused on it.
I mean, maybe it's like that for anyone that's trying to conceive, but I haven't had much of a life. I haven't been able to, you know, when you're trying, you can't go on certain trips, you know, everything's the timing of everything is so important. Or after an IUI, I remember my friend was going camping and the doctor said, oh, you probably shouldn't go to that elevation because the baby won't have enough oxygen. I was like, what? I can't even go camping. So there hasn't been a lot, and also a lot, all of my money has gone into this.
I certainly
haven't traveled, and dating has been strange because there's always this backdrop of, by the way, I'm currently trying to get pregnant with a donor. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking you for sperm, but you know, just so you know. And so, yeah. And then I have the podcast about my experience, but I also early on was writing a book proposal about it. And then later after that was writing a pilot about it. And so I really did a number on myself.
Right, right. I think it's so funny. We're both sitting here like, oh my God, it's like a full-time job.
And well, we're literally doing it.
Right. And maybe we shouldn't both be doing podcasts if we wanted a break. Maybe that wasn't the smartest move. But
pros and cons, because I don't think I definitely have been bolstered up by this whole experience and all of my listeners. And it's such a wonderful experience. And I don't know if I would be here if I hadn't started this. So I love it.
So I want to ask you the same question about both trying to conceive and the podcast. And so we were kind of talking about highs and lows, but what I want to know is like, what has been the most surprising thing about trying to conceive, and what has been the most surprising thing about the podcast?
Surprising thing about trying to conceive, I guess that it would be hard.
Right.
I never thought it would be hard. My mom had 5 kids. I just had this, I don't know, inflated, fertile vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not the way it was, you know? And I think a lot of women experience that. There's even younger women who, you know, they try and get pregnant for 6 months and then they go to the doctor and find out they've got a diminished ovarian reserve or something. Like, what? Why? I'm 35. I'm great. I never thought that I would end up doing IVF. I never thought that IVF wouldn't work.
Right.
I never thought that I'd have to use my frozen eggs without the man that I mm-hmm. planned to use them with. But that's how I ended up getting pregnant, everybody. Mm-hmm. I used my frozen eggs.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done a very good job of asking you about your actual story, but I guess.
Oh, well,
go listen to Molly's podcast.
I can do it in like 30 seconds.
Okay, let's hear it.
I interviewed 19 guys. I ended up choosing 2 guys. They alternated each month. On the fourth time, I got pregnant. And then I had a miscarriage. And by that time, I lost both donors. I did a couple IUIs. I had a chemical pregnancy. I did IVF. It basically didn't work. I had 2 mosaic embryos. They were retested. One came back normal. So I tried a transfer with that embryo and it didn't work. So then in January this year, I thawed half of my frozen eggs from when I was 37. And that left me with 4 embryos. I did an embryo transfer with a fresh embryo transfer with 2 of those. I had a pregnancy of unknown location, which was bullshit.
That was the first time I'd ever heard that. I learned that from you.
First time I ever heard that too. I can't believe it. But it's basically like it could be anywhere. And that became a miscarriage. And then I did a home insemination at my parents' house during COVID in April. And then I came back and I used 2 embryos that were left from the embryos that were made in January. And that's what I'm currently pregnant with. Yeah. That's a summary.
That's a great summary. And add
a lot of crying in there.
Yes. Yes. And laughing. You did a lot of laughing.
A lot of laughing and crying.
Yes. And a lot of little like ding. And then you tell some facts that you did a lot of research about.
Yeah.
A lot of work too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you still have half of your frozen eggs.
I still
as
have
well.
Half.
We need that guy to show up for baby number 2.
I mean, yeah, they're still waiting. I wish that I'd frozen 30, 40 eggs back mm-hmm. then because I wasn't sure any of them were going to work. So yeah, now there's 8 left, but 6 of them were actually mature. 2 of them were like questionable. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
One baby at a time.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
That's right. I loved the idea of twins actually.
Yeah.
Doctors don't love the idea of twins, but
right.
I thought that would be so great for my kid to have a playmate.
That would be nice. And kind of take the pressure or the question off of, are you done after one?
Yeah.
You'd probably be done after twins. I think anybody would probably be done after twins. Who knows?
Okay.
I don't know. Your mom kept going and going.
I know.
5 times.
5 times. Never tried for any of us.
Wow. Yeah, that is really hard to go from hearing that was kind of the norm that you grew up with to
I'm always hearing how much my mother loved being pregnant, loved it, and breastfeeding. And, you know, that's a whole other thing too. Like, you know, the idea of vaginal births, all of hers were vaginal, and the idea of breastfeeding. I mean, like all of this, it's so hard for so many people. And there's like a stigma around, you know, if the breastfeeding doesn't work and like, what's that going to do to my vision of myself? You know,
right.
Who cares?
And it does feel like
that's all I've learned from the podcast. Is who cares?
That's a good lesson. Yeah, because if you fixate on every little target, because it does always, you know, you're anxious until the 8-week ultrasound and then that goes well. So now you're worried about the genetic testing. You know, like the target just keeps moving and moving. And even after the kid is born, like you're saying, it's like, now am I going to be able to breastfeed? Am I going to know how to sleep train? Am I going to know, you know, it just never stops.
Yeah.
So kind of have to just say, fuck it at some point.
Fuck it. Forgive yourself. Do the best you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to be perfect.
Absolutely not. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but is there anything that you wanted to share that you wish that you had known earlier or advice that you have for women?
I talked about it on the podcast last week and this week, and it's related to what you asked about earlier about being public with everything. And I'm just kind of currently struggling with this catch-22 of sharing or not sharing your experience in the first trimester. And, you know, most people don't tell anyone that they're pregnant until 12 or 13 weeks. And I read this article last week saying that because of that, the whole experience of the first trimester is swept under the rug. And so people don't know what to expect from the first trimester. And then miscarriages are a mystery and sort of not talked about enough. And so like, I want more people And I want myself, I want everybody to just say that they're pregnant and have everybody just relax and be cool about it and chill mm-hmm. and know that it mm-hmm. might not work out and not be right. excited and have balloons bursting and, you know.
Right.
It's just, and I want to, I'd love to be that person for everybody, but who says it, but at the same time, I'm terrified that I'll have a miscarriage and that I'll, and then I'll, that'll have to be public. But I just like, what do we do about this silence of miscarriage? And another thing that I experienced earlier was this sort of shame that I wasn't more excited. I was having all of these doubts, like, what have I done? And I didn't know that that was a thing that so many pregnant women in their first trimester experienced, because first trimesters aren't really
talks about. Yeah. And I think it's so much more nuanced than just, oh, we're not telling people because we're afraid we're going to have a miscarriage, because yeah. I'm a very open person and I would tell people, the same people I would tell I was pregnant are the same people I would tell that I had a miscarriage. Like, I would never hide. I have mm-hmm. had a miscarriage and I have shared it with anybody who, you know, I've come across that where it's like a relevant conversation. It's not a big deal. But I think for me, it's more that it can be so difficult to kind of like navigate your own feelings when you're in it.
Right.
That other people, it's just like you're so much more vulnerable and other people's energy has so much more of an impact. And so you and I have both talked about like people being too supportive and too excited for us yeah. and like how you would never think that someone would overstep in that way, but it's real.
Oh, it gives me immediate anxiety.
Yes.
No. Please don't say thank you. Yes. I'm fine. Yes. Don't congratulate me.
Yes.
Exciting. I don't like that.
I'll cut this out, but I have had my boy name picked out forever. And so everybody knows what my son's name would be were I to ever have a son, right? The day I got my first beta test, just the first, not even the second that like make sure the number's going up, people start referring to this little cluster of cells by name. And I'm like,
this is
not even just like a, I'd prefer you not. This is like, we're shutting the whole thing down and you'll find out when I've delivered. Like I can't even be a part of like any of this if you're going to do that.
Oh my God.
And the only way I really got behind it, because I could not get them to stop. Still, they call them by name. I don't call them by name, but they still do it. And the only way I could finally just release my feelings about that is that all the next three embryos that would make sense to transfer are all female. So I sort of feel like if this doesn't work out, then I'm probably going to have a girl anyway. And so I can let this name go. But
that's true. That's true.
But still, I'm like, my thought is like, if this doesn't work out and I have another boy down the line, I would still want to name him this because this is my boy name. And I don't think this guy has like earned his name yet. Like he needs to show me that he's going to stick around, you know?
Yeah. Well, can I tell you, I don't know what this has to do with souls or what, but I feel like the baby with that soul and that name, they are not the baby that's in you right now. So I think there's another boy down the road. I think you can use that name. I think it's still him.
Yeah.
I definitely
you know, I kind of feel that way too. So something I started writing letters to my baby. Mm-hmm. And the first time I was pregnant, I bought like one of those pregnancy journals with prompts and I just couldn't, I felt so cheesy. It felt so forced. I just like couldn't do it. But I bought just a blank journal and I've been writing letters to my baby and I very much feel like I'm getting closer to knowing that the person I've been writing to is also this mass of cells. But for a while, it sort of felt like, okay, if this goes south, that soul that I've been writing to is still with me. It's just not this. Like it's.
But even if this does still go south, that baby might be in there. I mean, that soul might be in there, but he can take off and come back later.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either.
So I don't know how to get past this catch 22, if there is a way out of it, but it feels like, you know, even miscarriages, they happen, but when you hear about them, you're usually hearing about them in the past tense. It's not when somebody's actually going through it. And so people don't really understand what it actually feels like in mm-hmm. the moment. It's just a conundrum that's sort of on my mind right now about sharing and not sharing and what to keep private and what not to. And
that's true. I should probably share more about my miscarriage experience because what ended up happening for me is they didn't see a heartbeat at six, what we thought was 6.5 weeks. But since I hadn't used a trigger shot, they were like, well, we know when the IUI was, but the timing could really, so several days mm-hmm. off. So they kept waiting. But what was weird was that the gestational sac kept growing, but it was like at a point where they really should have been able to see a heartbeat, but they couldn't. But it was like ambiguous. Like I went in, I think, four different times to see if they could find a heartbeat. So I lived, probably in reality, it was really only like a week or maybe a week and a half, not knowing. I never knew that pregnancy could be ambiguous. Like I thought it was a yes or no box that you check. And if you have a positive pregnancy test, then you're pregnant. And if you don't, you don't. Like I just didn't realize there were like pregnancies of unknown location or, you know, just these different kind of variations of what can happen.
And you have to sit there and you have to wait and then you have to wait again and then you have to wait again. Yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
But the more people share, I just, you know, in general, I think err on the side of sharing, but of course, protect yourself and do what's right for you. I'm an overshare regardless. So it's okay. It's not so hard for me. But anyway, yeah, I think that's it.
Okay, well, if we haven't shared already, Molly's pregnant and she's and she's hungry. So we're going to let you eat. But thank you so much for talking. And I'm really excited to be in touch with you and just to have shared this whole journey with you. I know it can feel one-sided when you're putting stuff out. And even when you are getting feedback from your listeners, it's not a conversation. And so I just want you to know that you are making such a huge difference. And there are so many people like me who've been deeply impacted. And it's just amazing what you've done. So,
well, thank you. I'm so honored to hear that. Thank you so much. And it's been really, really nice getting to know you. Thank you so much.
All right. So good to talk to you. Have a good evening. See you later.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.